Okay, the last paper in our section is recent progress in prosodic speaker replication. The paper is going to be presented by Marcel Kokenbaum.
Yes, welcome to my talk. So this is some collaborative work with SRI International Speech Lab. So the title is Recent Progress in Prosodic Speaker Verification. So it's about prosodic speaker verification, but what else? Okay. So generally it's like follow-up work on what we call subspace multinomial model we presented last InterSpeech. So this is mainly like a modeling technique similar to the total variability modeling to obtain I vectors, but it's not used to for Gaussian parameters, Gaussian mean, but rather to model multinomial parameters. So what are the claims of this work? Is the first one was to visualize the quite complex system building process by some simple toy example and some figures. And the main claim was to introduce a new modeling to model the prosodic I vectors we obtain by probabilistic linear discriminant analysis. And we wanted to compare this approach to the two main state-of-the-art prosodic systems that are out there in the field. And finally, of course, because prosodic is always just higher level of speech, so we wanted to combine it with a state-of-the-art capsule baseline system. So, okay, now comes this toy example to explain the system building process, and just imagine we have some conversational speech utterance. So here it's just some excerpt from the NIST data. So it says, and where are you, where which state are you in? So as we use prosodic features, we only extract some fundamental frequency measures. So we extract the pitch. Second, we have some loudness measurement. So we just use the normalized energy for that. And finally, we have some duration measure. And this is derived from an LVCSR system. So it's quite accurate. And it's from English one. So in this case, we have like 10 syllable, single syllable words. So the syllable segmentation is the same as the words. And actually now we have these three measurements and now we obtain SNRFs from them. And these so-called SNRFs, that's a syllable-based non-union extract region features. So these are like many measurements of pitch, energy, and duration. For instance, we cut out the segments based on the syllables and we measure the duration like for the onset, the coda, or we measure like raise and fall of the pitch and the energy, mean, maximum. I'll just exemplify this with some few measurements. So we just take the mean and the mean of each segment here for pitch in the blue square, and the red cross is the energy. And our third measurement, what we use in this example, is the duration, the number of frames for each syllable. So now we have like a combination of discrete values and continuous values. So how to model these? So what SRI came with is like they said, okay, we try to bin these into some discrete classes. And the best way they found was to use a soft binning by use of that they train small Gaussian mixture models with these. So you really take the single mean parameter, train a background model, and so on. And so you really extract these measurements from all your background data. And then in our example, we train like two mixtures on this one-dimensional duration measure, which you see here. And we do the same for the pitch. In this example, we use three of them, three mixtures components. And for the energy here, we use four mixtures. So and now we have these background models for each of the SNRFs. And now we can start like parametrizing our heterogeneous features we get from the SNRF. So another example I show, I just plot the 10 values from the top to the GMMs. And now you can see how they hit the GMMs. And now you can compute just the posterior probabilities that each Gaussian generated this frame. So this is like a soft binning. And Actually, you can just generate counts and soft counts, and you see for the duration, okay, the first Gaussian get a count from 6.3 and the other 3.7 and so on. And as you see, this is like, this is the same thing you compute if you do a compute the weights for GMM. So this is not a, you don't compute any means or anything. So this is like the underlying model is a multinomial model. And if you would plot the multinomial model space for the duration, you would see that you have like just a line, because it's always restricted to sum up to one. So for the pitch, you would get a 2D simplex. You can move around, but it's always restricted. And for the energy in this example, you would get a 3D simplex. So this would be the full multinomial model space. But what we try to do with the subspace multinomial model is to to learn some structure in the data, some low-dimensional structure, where it moves inside the parameters if you change speakers. So, and furthermore, these are really like independent features. They are completely mutual, and but we also try to learn correlations between them, that we can just move inside all of these subspaces at once with very, very little parameters. So what I show now is just to plot a single-dimensional subspace in these that controls all these spaces at once. And you see that if you project it back to this multinomial space, you really get some nonlinear single-dimensional lines. And so you really move like, it's just one number you would move, the I vector. And you would move like with the colors. If you increase the number, it goes to red. And so this is just, the black dot is just one extracted I vector. So and then we use this whole model to extract the I vectors, like for the standard I vector extractor, to get a low low dimensional representation of the whole utterance. So let's zoom into this four-dimensional energy part, and let's look at a two-dimensional subspace. And now we see we get a nonlinear plane into the three-dimensional space where the movement is restricted. Actually, the black dots here, they're really like real data. They're really like that's I vectors projected back from real data. And if we zoom in there, we can the colors, they show the different speakers. So it's like 10 speakers, 10 utterances each. So the funny thing is that we have a, it can move in two-dimensional space, but here we already see that it's somehow in one-dimensional space. So there seems to be even a smaller subspace. So even probably one dimension would be enough for this example here. And you can already see that you can distinguish the speakers quite well here. But then, of course, this is in the multinomial space. So, but we in the end, we use the I vectors and model them in the I vector space. So if we go plot it in the I vector space, just the I vector parameters, we really get these nice clusters for speakers. And this is without any compensation of anything. So, and that's where then the PLDA model comes in. So let's go to another artificial data set, also in 2D space. So here we have again like four speakers. That's the I vectors in 2D space for four speakers. So the big dots are the mean of the speaker, and then we have like several utterances each. And so now we use a linear discriminant analysis assumption. So we say we have some across class variability. So this is the solid line. So we really see the variability between the classes, and then we have a shared common within class covariance matrix. And you see that all the speakers, the individual utterances, they share the same variability, covariance matrix. So with this, you can really see that even if you have like this and that dot from the red, you would still recognize them as from the same speaker, because you have a big variability in this dimension. And if you go from here to there, you would see, okay, these are different speakers, they don't belong together. And this is the plain LDA assumption, but what we use is we use it as a probabilistic model. And the nice thing is that we can really train the parameters of the matrices, the covariances with an EM algorithm. And secondly, we we can use the PLDA model to directly evaluate the likelihood ratio that we usually compute with the UBM. And we can even compute the proper likelihood ratio, that really we can look, are these two I vectors generated by the same speaker or not? And if you look at it, this is, okay, this is quite complicated integral, but then you look at the numerator, you really see that you would look, okay, we have the I vector W, and then the prior is the given speaker, and we have two I vectors, and with the prior is the same, so it's PY, and then we just integrate over all speakers. So we don't really care if which speaker it is, we just say, are they from the same or not? And in the denominator, we really have the marginal probabilities, likelihoods for if that they come from different speakers. And the nice thing is that this thing can be evaluated analytically, and we can solve it, and it can be the scoring can be performed very efficiently. So the experiments I present are on the NIST SRE 2008 task. So well, we presented on the what we used for the NIST 2010 development, or what SRI defined for it. So it's mainly the telephone condition. So the target samples are the same, but the number of imposter samples is increased a lot to because of the new error measurement, the new DCF, because they emphasize the very low false alarm rates. And the UBM, JFA, the model, the PLDA, everything is trained on SRE 04, 05 and switchboard data. So we will evaluate three different systems. The first two are the state-of-the-art systems that are there, and the third is the one we propose here. So the first is this polynomial JFA system, what I call it. It's so joint factor analysis modeling of Gaussian mean parameters, and it just uses quite simple prosodic polynomial contour features. So this is a subset that is in the SNRF features, but they are just 13-dimensional. They really just approximate the contour over the syllable. And second is the SNRF SVM system, that it's up to the point where we have soft counts of the SNRFs, it's exactly the same system as this one, but just the modeling is then done by putting these really high dimensions, they are about 30,000 dimensional, put them to SVM and train it, so it's quite demanding. And we use then the I-vector extractor to go down to a dimensionality of about 200 from 30,000. And in this low-dimensional space, we can use really nicely a machine learning algorithm, and the PLDA model seems to be very, very nice to do this. And finally, we have the baseline system, that's the SRI system for NIST SRE 10, and we'll fuse it. So this is a depth plot showing for the three single prosodic systems. So the red line is a polynomial system, the blue is a standard SNRF system, and the green is a SNRF PLDA system. So the stars are the new DCF, the old DCF, and the equal error rate from left to right. And we see that we get a big improvement over both systems on the equal error rate, so we reach like 6.9% with the PLDA modeling, and all the others are around 10%. And also on the old DCF, we get a big improvement. And a quite strange behavior is that the SNRF SVM system always somehow outperforms slightly if you go to the very low false alarm region. And that's some behavior that we really can't explain now. And second, then the next results will be on the fusion. So we have the baseline system. It has an equal error rate of 1.6%, and the new DCF is 0.42. So we do a standard score level fusion by logistic regression with some jackknifing approach. So we see that we can, most of the fusions also for the polynomial and the polynomial system on the new DCF, we get better results. On the equal error rate, we get even a hit. For the SNRF system, we get even the best system. That's quite confusing. We get the best results on the equal error rate with 1.47, but we get the best improvement on new DCF for our system. And if you remember, on this plot, it was the other way around. So we were better on equal error rate, and the other system was better on the new DCF. But in the fusion, it's somehow the other way around. So we would really want to try this, that we, because it's all on 2008 data, so that we can train the fusion on 2008 and apply it to 2010. So maybe the fusion wasn't that properly trained in this case. So yeah, in conclusion, we can say that the PLDA highly outperforms the, okay, I didn't mention that because it probably the last paper, we did the cosine distance Stokes scoring with LDA and WCCN, and we get about relative improvement of 20% here with the, to the PLDA. And generally, the iVector PLDA system gives the best overall performance with 6.9% equal error rate. And that's, to our knowledge, the best score for a prosodic, simple prosodic, or single prosodic system. We have to investigate in this decrease in the low fault alarm regions. And yeah, the fusion gives around 10% relative improvement on the new DCF measure, which is quite nice. And yeah, for the future work, we want to investigate in diverse channel and speech style. This is just on telephone, but on the NIST evaluation, there's only like microphone and not conversational speech. And another thing we are trying already is the iVector modeling with PLDA for the simple polynomial features that we used in the JFA modeling before. And then to combine these both systems, one on Gaussian mean modeling and the other on the multinomial modeling, and even based one on SNRFs, one on the other thing, and to combine this. And hopefully you can see that on the interspeech. So that's it, and thank you.
We have time for questions. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. So, what was the what was your baseline result without adding any prosodic? How much did any of the prosodics add over your baseline?
You mean the spectral baseline?
Yep.
It was this 1.6% equal error rate, and first line it's on top of the table.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see it there. Thank you.
Okay.
Hi, thanks for your talk. I can't remember. Did you actually apply score normalization in any of
the No, that's another nice thing I didn't mention here, but usually for PLDA we don't need any score normalization.
And what about for the SVM systems?
Yeah, the SVM system has that T-norm in it. I didn't.
Okay, this is just a bit of speculation. I know that sometimes having the background data set in the SVM training can act as score normalization as well. Perhaps I can point you to some articles where it shows that this, depending on the background data set, it can actually rotate the debt curve a little bit, particularly in the MIN-DCF region that you're talking about. So perhaps what's happening, this is still just speculation, you're maybe seeing the improved MIN-DCF in the SVM system for this reason, and perhaps the fusion is counteracting something which score norm also counteracts.
You say that it's not really that good, the SVM system, probably. At least in combination, not anymore.
Yeah, perhaps the normalization effect in the SVM training is counteracting the same problem that fusion is counteracting.
Okay.
Possibility.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
Any further questions?
Ajim.
Okay, go ahead. Could you use the...
So, when you do PLDA, did you normalize the length of the iVector views?
No, just without any of these fancy tricks.
Yeah, because I was just wondering if, because you have this multinomial rather than Gaussian distribution in the iVectors, if you would have the same behavior as the Gaussian.
Yeah, the iVectors in the end, they really Gaussian distributed if you look at the distribution. They are again look.
Yeah, but that's why I was asking.
Yeah, but.
If you have this behavior of length normalization before doing the PLDA in this case or not?
No, and it even, for me, it never helped. I tried all these tricks and they don't help me at all.
Oh,
they
so
help for the capsule system, but I don't know, not doesn't okay, work so for me.
Oh, that's good things to know.
Yeah.
questions? Okay, if there's no question, let's ask the speaker again.
Thanks.
Okay, this is the end of this session. Thank